Garrison is a place on the east bank of the Hudson River up in Putnam County, about 58 road miles north from Tribeca. Late on a fall evening, traffic is not a problem. One toll plaza, empty parkways, average speed can be as high as you dare to make it, but Reacher drove cautiously. He was new to the concept of driving a regular journey from A to B. He was new to even having an A or a B. He felt like an alien in a settled landscape, and like any alien, he was anxious to stay out of trouble. So he drove slow enough not to be noticed and let the late commuters in their fast sedans scurry past him on the left and the right. The 58 miles took him an hour and 17 minutes. His street was very dark because it was buried deep in an underpopulated rural area. The contrast with the brassy glow of the city was total. He turned into his driveway and watched his headlight beams bounce and flick over the massed plantings crowding the asphalt. The leaves were turning dry brown and they looked vivid and unreal in the electric light. He rounded the last curve and the beam swung toward the garage door and washed over two cars waiting nose out in front of it. He jammed to a panic stop and their lights came on and blazed in his face and blinded him just as his mirror filled with bright light from behind. He ducked his head away from the glare and saw people running at him from the side with powerful flashlight beams bouncing in front of them through the dark. He swiveled and saw two sedans crunching to a stop behind him, headlights swinging and blazing. People were spilling out and running toward him. His car was pinned motionless in a bright matrix of light. People were flashing through light and darkness, coming at him. They had guns and dark vests over their coats. They were surrounding his car. He saw some of the flashlights were strapped to shotgun barrels. The crowding people were lit from behind by the harsh beams from their cars. Fog was drifting up from the river and hanging in the air. The lights were cutting through the fog and the beams were crisscrossing in crazy, moving, horizontal patterns. A figure stepped close to his car. A hand came up and rapped on the glass next to his head. The hand opened. It was a small hand, pale and slim, a woman's hand. A flashlight beam turned directly on it and showed it was cupping a badge. The badge was shaped like a shield. It was bright gold. There was a gold eagle perched on the top of the shield with its head cocked to the left. The flashlight moved closer, and Reacher saw raised lettering on the shield, gold on gold. He stared at it. It said, Federal Bureau of Investigation, U.S. Department of Justice. The woman pressed the shield against the window. It touched the glass with a cold metallic click. She shouted in at him. He heard her voice coming at him out of the darkness.
Turn off the engine!
She was shouting. He could see nothing except beams of light aimed at him. He killed the motor and heard nothing but fog hanging in the air and the crunch of restless boots in his driveway.
Place both hands on the wheel!
The woman's voice shouted. He placed both hands on the wheel and sat still, head turned, watching the door. It was open from the outside, and the light clicked on and spilled out over the dark woman from the restaurant. The sandy guy with the fair mustache was at her shoulder. She had the FBI badge in one hand and a gun in the other. The gun was pointed at his head.
Out of the vehicle, she said. Nice and slow.
She stepped back, with the gun tracking the movement of his head. He twisted and swung his legs out of the footwell and paused, one hand on the seat back, the other on the wheel, his weight ready to slide his feet to the ground. He could see a half dozen men in front of him, caught in the glare of headlights. There would be more behind him, maybe more near the house, maybe more at the mouth of the driveway. The woman stepped back another pace. He stepped down to the ground in front of her.
Turn around! She said. Place your hands on the vehicle.
He did as he was told. The sheet metal was cold to the touch and slimy with night dew. He felt hands on every inch of his body. They took his wallet from his coat and the stolen cash from his pants pocket. Somebody pushed past his shoulder and leaned in and took his keys from the ignition.
Now, walk to the car,
the woman called. She pointed with the badge. He half turned and saw headlight beams trapped in the fog, missing his legs by a yard. one of the sedans near the garage. He walked toward it. He heard a voice behind him shouting, "Search his vehicle!" A guy in a dark blue Kevlar vest was waiting at the car near the garage. He opened the rear door and stepped back. The woman's briefcase was upright on the rear seat, imitation leather with a clumsy, coarse grain stamped into its surface. He folded himself inside next to it. The guy in the vest slammed the door on him, and simultaneously the opposite door opened and the woman slid in alongside him. Her coat was open and he saw her blouse and her suit. The skirt was dusty black and short. He heard the whisper of nylon and saw the gun again, still pointing at his head. The front door opened and the sandy guy knelt in on the seat and stretched back for the briefcase. Reacher saw pale hairs on his wrist, the strap of a watch. The guy flipped the case open and pulled out a sheaf of papers. He juggled a flashlight and played the beam over them. Reacher saw dense print and his own name in bold letters near the top of the first page.
"Search warrant," the woman said to him. "For your house."
The sandy guy ducked back out and slammed the door. The car went silent. Reacher heard footsteps through the fog. They grew faint. For a second, the woman was backlit by the glare outside. Then she reached up and forward and clicked on the dome light. It was hot and yellow. She was sitting sideways, her back against the door, her knees toward him, resting her gun arm along the seat back. The arm was bent, with the elbow on the parcel shelf, so the gun was canted comfortably forward, pointing at him. It was a Sig Sauer, big and efficient and expensive.
"Keep your feet flat on the floor," she said.
He nodded. He knew what she wanted. He kept his back against his own door and shoved his feet underneath the front seat. It put an awkward sideways twist in his body that meant if he wanted to start moving, he would be slow enough at it to get his head blown off before he got anywhere.
"Hands where I can see them," she said.
He straightened his arms and cupped his palms around the headrest on the seat in front of him and rested his chin on his shoulder. He was looking sideways at the Sig Sauer's muzzle. It was rock steady. Beyond it, her finger was tight on the trigger. Beyond that was her face.
"Okay, now sit still," she said.
Her face was impassive.
"You're not asking what this is about," she said.
"It's not about what happened 1 hour and 17 minutes ago," he said to himself. "No way was this all organized 1 hour and 17 minutes.
He kept quiet and absolutely still. He was worried about the whiteness in the woman's knuckle where it wrapped around the Sig Sauer's trigger. Accidents can happen.
"You don't want to know what this is about?" she asked.
He looked at her blankly.
"No handcuffs," he thought. "Why not?"
The woman shrugged at him.
"Okay, have it your own way," she was saying.
Her face settled to a stare. It was not a pretty face, but it was interesting. Some character there. She was about 35, which is not old, but there were lines in her skin, like she spent time making animated expressions. Probably more frowns than smiles, he thought. Her hair was jet black, but thin. He could see her scalp. It was white. It gave her a tired, sickly look, but her eyes were bright. She glanced beyond him, out into the darkness through the car window, out to where her men were doing things in his house. She smiled. Her front teeth were crossed. The right one was canted sideways, and it overlaid the left one by a fraction. An interesting mouth. It implied some kind of a decision. Her parents hadn't had the flaw corrected, and later, neither had she. She must have had the opportunity, but she had decided to stick with nature. Probably the right choice. It made her face distinctive, gave it character. She was slim under her bulky coat. There was a black jacket that matched the skirt and a cream blouse loose over small breasts. The blouse looked like polyester that had been washed many times. It spiraled down into the waistband of the skirt. She was twisted sideways, and the skirt was halfway up her thighs. Her legs were thin and hard under black nylon. Her knees were pressed together, but there was a gap between her thighs.
"Would you stop doing that, please?" she said.
Her voice had gone cold, and the gun moved.
Doing what?
Reacher asked.
Looking at my legs.
He switched his gaze up to her face.
Somebody points a gun at me, I'm entitled to check them out head to toe, wouldn't you say?
You like doing that?
Doing what?
Looking at women?
He shrugged.
Better than I like looking at some things, I guess.
The gun moved closer.
This isn't funny, asshole. I don't like the way you're looking at me.
He stared at her.
What way am I looking at you?
He asked.
You know what way.
He shook his head.
No, I don't, he said.
Like you're making advances, she said. You're disgusting, you know that?
He listened to the contempt in her voice and stared at her thin hair, her frown, her crooked teeth, her hard, dried-up body in its ludicrous, cheap businesswoman's uniform.
You think I'm making advances to you?
Aren't you? Wouldn't you like to?
He shook his head again.
Not while there are dogs on the street, he said.
They sat in crackling, hostile silence for the best part of 20 minutes. Then the sandy guy with a mustache came back to the car and slid into the front passenger seat. The driver's door opened and a second man got in. He had keys in his hand. He watched the mirror until the woman nodded and then fired up the motor and eased past Reacher's parked truck and headed out toward the road.
Do I get to make a phone call? Reacher asked. Or doesn't the FBI believe in stuff like that?
The sandy guy was staring straight ahead at the windshield.
At some point within the first 24 hours, he said, we'll make sure you're not denied your constitutional rights.
The woman kept the Sig Sauer's muzzle close to Reacher's head all the way back to Manhattan, 58 fast miles through the dark and the fog. They parked underground someplace south of Midtown and forced him out of the car into a white-painted garage full of bright light and dark sedans. The woman turned a full circle on the concrete floor with her shoes, scraping in the silence. She was examining the whole crowded space, a cautious approach. Then she pointed toward a single black elevator door located in a distant corner. There were two more guys waiting there. Dark suits, white shirts, quiet ties. They watched the woman and the sandy guy all the way and across the diagonal. There was deference in their faces. They were junior guys, but they were also comfortable and a little proud, like they were some kind of hosts. Reacher suddenly understood the woman and the sandy guy were not New York agents. They were visitors from somewhere else. They were on somebody else's turf. The woman hadn't examined the whole garage simply because she was cautious. She had done it because she didn't know where the elevator was. They put Reacher in the center of the elevator car and crowded in around him. The woman, the sandy guy, the driver, the two local boys. 5 people, 5 weapons. The 4 men took a corner each and the woman stood in the center, close to Reacher, like she was claiming him as hers. One of the local boys touched a button and the door rolled shut and the elevator took off. It traveled upward for a long time and stopped hard with 21 showing on the floor indicator. The door thumped back and the local boys led the way out into a blank corridor. It was gray, thin gray carpet, gray paint, gray light. It was quiet, like everyone except the hardcore enthusiasts had gone home hours before. There were closed doors spaced along the corridor wall. The guy who had driven the sedan down from Garrison paused in front of the third and opened it up. Reacher was maneuvered to the doorway and looked in at a bare space, maybe 12 by 16, concrete floor, cinder block walls, all covered in thick gray paint like the side of a battleship. The ceiling was unfinished and the ducting was all visible, square trunking made from thin flecked metal. Fluorescent fittings hung from chains and threw a flat glare across the gray. There was a single plastic garden chair in the corner. It was the only thing in the room.
Sit down,
the woman said. Reacher walked away from the chair to the opposite corner and sat on the floor, wedged into the angle of the cinder block walls. The cinder block was cold and the paint was slick. He folded his arms over his chest and stretched his legs out straight and crossed his ankles. Rested his head on the wall 45 degrees to his shoulders, so he was gazing straight at the people standing by the door. They backed out into the corridor and closed the door on him. There was no sound of a lock turning, but there didn't need to be, because there was no handle on the inside. He felt the faint shudder of footsteps receding through the concrete floor, then he was left with nothing but silence floating on a whisper of air from the vents above his head. He sat in the silence for maybe 5 minutes, and then he felt more footsteps outside, and the door opened again, and a man stuck his face inside the room and stared straight in at him. It was an older face, big and red and bloated with strain and puffy with blood pressure, full of hostility, and its frank stare said, "So you're the guy, huh?" The stare lasted 3 or 4 long seconds, and then the face ducked back out and the door slammed and the silence came back again.